You're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari, where NFL legends live on. Back to you, boys.
It's him. He's alive.
And now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is former Colts and Dolphins fullback Don Nottingham. Let me remind you about Don's background. He's from Wyden, West Virginia, which is in the central part of the state. Played his college football at Kent State, where he was an All-Mid-American Conference selection in 1969 and 1970. He was a 17th round draft pick by the Baltimore Colts in 1971, and he played in the league from 71 to 1978 for the Colts and the Dolphins. He was traded from the Colts to the Dolphins midway through the 1973 season and became a part of Miami's run to the Super Bowl VIII title. Over the course of Don's career, he carried the ball 611 times for nearly 2,500 yards and 34 touchdowns. He added 67 receptions for 502 yards. And from 1974 to 1976, he was among the top 10 running backs in touchdowns. He was inducted into the Kent State Hall of Fame back in 1982, and we are honored to have him back with us tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Don, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back.
No
Don.
Problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Don, for people who aren't familiar enough with the history of Kent State football, you had a couple of young teammates your senior year named Jack Lambert and Nick Saban. Talk about playing alongside those guys and the success you guys had at Kent State.
Well, both Nick and Jack came in as freshmen in my senior year. So the only practice I got with them was when they were getting us ready to play our games. And I can remember Jack came in, he had him playing defensive end when he was a freshman. And he was about 6'4 and about 160 pounds, just hard as a nails and hard as a rock. And he would come rushing in there to try to get the quarterback, and he'd reject him and knock him ass over 10 cups. Next play, here he comes again. And the best thing that happened to Jack was when they brought in the new coach and they moved into middle linebacker and got a bunch of off-air defensive linemen to keep everybody off him and just let him go basically sideline to sideline and make plays. He was just a heck of an athlete, tougher than nails. And, I think the most he ever got his weight up to was about 220, which back in those days was a lot of weight. Today, that's pretty small. But Nick was a little cornerback that came from down on the river, and he just was hard-nosed and would not let anybody get behind him. And that's just the way he played ball, and that's kind of the way he coaches, too. So, he knows what he can do and what he can't do, and he did a nice job with that. But it was some good times. As you look back, I feel like I had a better career than what I probably deserved. But when I look at it, my high school days and my college days still probably mean the most to me from anything. When I get a chance to be around some of my old guys that I went to school with, it brings back a lot of great feelings. And, it was before we were really pros, we were still just trying to play. So, once you get to the pro level and you realize that it's all about winning, it doesn't matter how you do it or what you do, as long as you follow the rules, but you've got to win.
And Don, like I mentioned in your intro, you were drafted in the 17th round, right? A whole another draft and a half over what we have today, the seven rounds that we have in the draft today. So when you got to camp as a rookie, did you feel like you had an equal opportunity to make the team the same way the other 16 guys that were drafted ahead of you, did? And how did you do? What did you do to make yourself stand out and grab the attention of the coaches?
There were only a couple other backs that were in that draft. So from playing from my position, I was competing for one of probably three places on the Colt team. But I was so angry, I guess is the best way I can put it, from everybody, all the media people I talked to, all the newspaper people that I talked to, from the minute I got drafted. Remember, I was drafted, when you say 17th round, you make it sound good. But when you get drafted in the 17th round by the world champions, that means you're dead last. I mean, you are dead last. You're the last one that they even thought about. And matter of fact, Coach McCafferty, Don McCafferty's the one that drafted me, told me, you know, Donnie, I tried to let him get me call your number before that, but they wouldn't let me do it till right at the end. And I said, well, I got a chance to come to camp. So I tried to be positive about it. But I mean, it seemed like every single time I spoke to one of the expert writers or news person, they would kind of give me this, hey, how does it feel to be Mr. Irrelevant? That spot has never, ever made a football team. So you do realize you're going to go to camp and get a cup of coffee and get sent home. So I decided before I went, and because I remember I told my mom, I said, when I go to camp, I said, I'm going to put some people on their cans. I'm going to knock them down. So I went to camp with a big giant chip on my shoulder, and I was a good hitter. I mean, I was always a good hitter. So I was a good lead blocker. And so I showed up at camp, and I just figured I'd keep my mouth shut. And if they send me home, they send me home. But if anybody gets in my way, they're going to know they got hit. They're going to know they ran into an Ohio football player. I know how to play ball. And so I went into camp with, I had confidence. And also, you got to realize, I graduated high school at 217 pounds. So a 220-pound fullback in 1971, 72, that was some weight. And plus, I was 5'10". So when you want to come down and block me or try to take on my blocks when I'm coming at you, you got to be at my level. So I had a very big leverage advantage over some of these guys that are 6'2 and 6'3. And that seemed like all of them are that size in the NFL. So, like I said, I went to camp and I can remember one 95 degrees summer day, we're having practice. We used to do four or five live plays at the end of each practice. And I saw Bubba Smith over there play defensive end. I saw him kind of loafing. So I conned the quarterback into running a sucker play. And I figured, okay, the guard's going to pull out and go around him. And then the natural thing for a defensive end to do would be to then follow that guard around, which leaves his side wide open. And then the idea is the fullback comes up and hits him inside out, and we run the play inside. So I figured I had him. I'm going to get this on film. I'm going to knock the crap out of Bubba Smith, all-pro defensive end. And Bubba was 6'7 and 265 pounds. He was a man. Well, he pretty much set me up. He let me get almost perfectly to him, and I was there. I had my legs back. My back was straight. My head was up. I was in perfect form. And, I mean, he literally rejected me. Just boom. He hit me with a forearm and knocked me 5 yards into the backfield, ass over 10 cups. And guess what? That's all film. So that means we had to watch it four or five times at the end of that night, and everybody laughed at me. And so I figured, well, that blew up in my face. I was gonna knock a veteran out and make it look bad. And he showed me what being a rookie's all about. He did welcome me to the NFL. He picked me up right after that play by the arm, and like a sack of potatoes is, welcome to the NFL, rookie. And I mean, I thought I was pretty sure when I went back to my room that night that I was going to get a call from the coach the next morning and say, see ya. But they kept me around, and I tried all summer. I don't think I ever really did get anybody too awful hard, but I think I showed enough that they let me stay around.
And Don, I read that it was your Colts teammate, linebacker Ray May, who gave you the nickname the human bowling ball after, you know, speaking of knocking him down, you knocked him down three straight times, and because he couldn't get leverage on you. Is that how it happened?
That's exactly right. Ray was an all-pro weak side linebacker, and we're running – it was a defensive day where I'm actually – you know, I'm the backup to Norm Boulash, so I'm running all the other team's offensive plays. Our offense is basically the second and third guys like me. And so we're at the end of the practice where we do the three or four live ones again, and the team we're playing like to run these power plays. And so the power play put the fullback on the weak side linebacker, and then and they had a good fullback. So I can't remember who it was exactly, but anyhow, Ray's an all pro. He knows how to play. So they call the first play, and I'm figuring everything's being filmed, so, and this is live. I'm gonna do my best to knock him on his can. Well, he went out there, and here he comes. And two things can happen. He can go out, he can go in, or he can take me on. Whichever way it is, I've got to adjust and make the play. So I go out, and he decides he's going to just knock the rookie back into the backfield. Well, that's a bad thing to try to do. Anyhow, we hit, and I basically knocked him ass over 10 cups backwards, easier than I thought it would happen. And Coach McCafferty went crazy and said, run that goddamn play again. So they go in the huddle. Now I know it's coming out. He knows it's coming. I know it's coming. Everybody knows it's coming. So this time I'm running out there to get him, and he gets low, and I get low, and he gets lower. I get lower. Boom, and I knocked him on his butt again. And I thought, okay, I got by that. I'm going back to the huddle. McCafferty throws his clipboard down and says, you guys line up and do this again. What is wrong with you people? We got to be able to stop that. That's one of their bread and butter plays. So I'm figuring, God dang, he's going to really be ready to come at me now. So anyhow, this time I go out there, and I mean, we're coming. Now it's a matter of pride. I'm done. I'm not going to get beat. Anyhow, he gets low. I get low. He gets lower. Well, you can't get down any lower than me. I'm pretty stout. And I was on the ground. His head was just about on the ground. So I just basically ran over his head and his shoulder, and, He jumped up holding his shoulder and yelling and screaming something about, you can't get lower, no goddamn bowling ball. And somebody put it in the newspaper. You know, somebody put it in the newspaper. And then we played a Monday night game after that. And that was when Howard Cosell was running the Monday night stuff. And they always came around practices that week. And so he read the paper, so he thought it was pretty cool that we had a human bowling ball in the crowd. So he started calling me. He used to call me the roly-poly bowling ball. And that's how that name stuck, because he did it on Monday Night Football, and then it got picked up everywhere and otherwise. So I tell all the kids when I talk to them nowadays that, man, you don't let anybody tell you what you can do and what you can't do. But sometimes all the really good nicknames are taken. You just have to take what they give you. If you don't keep it funny, it's not any fun. But I mean, I've had my share of rejections, but I think overall over my career, I always felt like when we graded the films at the end of each game, I had to grade out at 100%. I had no room for error. When you give me the ball on the 1 yard line, it better be a touchdown. If I'm leading the block on the 1 yard line, and we better get a touchdown, because that's how I have to do it. I have to grade out at 100%, because when I got to Miami, Shula put it best I've ever seen. He said, you know, he says, if you're not a starter, you're a luxury. And he's always looking right at me when he said this. And he says, and we can't afford very many luxuries. And I said, well, that's great. I'm sitting behind Larry Zonka, who is my hero from the time I was a freshman in high school. I mean, his hometown is 8 miles from mine. He was the level that we tried to play up to. And so what am I? I am a luxury, and I'm a luxury behind Larry Zonka. So guess what I can't afford to do? I can't afford to mess up, or else I'm going home. And I always took that to heart, and that's the difference. You know, when you first start playing ball, they might keep you on the team so they have enough people, so they've got a nice crowd of people. But at the pro level, when you're getting paid, if you're not able to get the job done, you're going to get sent home. And so, I mean, I always had that specter in the back of my mind that, you know, any time I could be heading home. And it's a fact of life. It's a job, and it's a job that only you get paid, only get to keep getting paid if you're doing something better than anybody else can do. So it's kind of neat. But like I said, I tell anybody that wants to listen to me. I go talk to kids a lot, and I enjoy talking to kids. But my point is, you know, don't anybody tell you what you can do. You show them what you can do. And if it's not good enough, they can send you home. But as long as you know you did your best, that's the best you can ask for, ever.
Bob, questions for Don?
Don, I want to talk about your early days in Baltimore. I did a lot of traveling in the late 70s, and we would go to Baltimore Oriole games down at Memorial Stadium, and I always had it was a soft place in my heart. It was, as you know, that stadium was almost right smack in the middle of a neighborhood. You got that feel a lot different than where I grew up near Yankee Stadium. You just got a lot different feeling when you went to Baltimore, just that neighborhood, and I'm sure you have some fond memories. Talk about just that neighborhood and Memorial Stadium in general.
Memorial Stadium was ancient when I first walked into it. Mm. But when I first walked into it, first opening game, my rookie year, there I am. And what I was so proud of, because I had a uniform, I made the team. And I honestly didn't know I was going to make the team until like 5 days before that game, the last cut. That's when I knew I was going to be there. And I remember walking into the Memorial Stadium, and I mean, it was old. I mean, the dressing rooms, everything about it was, but it was a tight stadium. The people were right down on the field, and you know, they held close to 60,000 people, and it was jam-packed. And there I am, and I remember telling everybody I knew, because I knew the game was going to be one of those regional games, so people in Ohio would get to see it. And we were playing the New York Jets, which was a big rivalry for us. And we go out there to play, and I told everybody that I knew, I said, yeah, you watch the kickoff returns, the punt returns, 48. And so wherever the ball is, I'll get in the picture somehow. That's what I'm going to do. That's the only chance you got to see me. So I was pumped up, and so I'm running around. And I have a hard time describing this to kids, but I started pretty much – 2 out of 3 years, and I played a lot my sophomore year in high school, played all 4 years in college. But once you get to the NFL, you're just ordinary. You know, it's very, very few people that get to come out of any college and get to be at the top of the game at the NFL side. And I mean, I fought for everything I had. So I'm there, and I'm like at 40,000 feet. I'm like pumped up. And I am just ready. I am going to be knocking bodies around. I'm going to have fun. I'm giving it all up. And I was in that stadium, and I mean, 60,000 people stood up, and they made you feel so good. I have a brick from that stadium that one of my buddies sent me down. If you come to my office, you can see a brick from Memorial Stadium in Baltimore. It's on right behind my desk, and I got it. It's mine, and we won a lot of games in Baltimore because of that stadium, just like we won a lot of games in Miami because of the Orange Bowl. The stadiums, like you said, you've been around Yankee Stadium and a bunch of the other stadiums around the country. I played in a 6,000 seat stadium in high school, and we probably had 20,000 seats at Kent. And when you get to going around, and all the stadiums you see are huge and fantastic and modern. Well, we thought they were modern. Today's things are a whole lot better than they are now. But the feeling that you were, that you had your 60,000 people behind you where you were home, just like if you went up to play Buffalo, you had 60,000 people up there that weren't on your side. Or New York, same thing. Difference is when you go to Miami, there's as many New Yorkers in Miami in the stadium as there are Miami people, but the Miami people still make a lot of noise.
Don, one more before we let you go, and you're heavily involved in the local NFL alumni chapter down there in Florida. Talk about that and some of the events you guys have coming up.
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff with the NFL Alumni Association. Our motto is caring for kids. And what that is, that's a bunch of old guys like me. That's kind of how we get to relive ourselves, because we'll get out in the communities all over the place in the community. We're trying to raise money and put money in the hands of people in the local communities so that they can make it a better place to live. And that's a lot of the stuff that I got learning from guys like Johnny Unitas and Earl Morrill and Tom Matty, John Mackey, all the guys that I broke in with in Baltimore. They taught us to get back out into the community and do that. And up here, I'm in Ocala now. I've been here since 99, and we're kind of far away from, we're like 80 miles from Orlando and 80 miles from Tampa. So we're kind of in the middle of nowhere. So we've kind of started our own little program here this year that I'm kind of proud of. We call it Champions for Champions. And basically what we are, I bring the old champions, which are guys like me, and it doesn't have to just be football. I mean, if you're a pro or exceptional at about anything, we got horse people up here. We got a lot of neat things that go on. But then the other champions that we work for are the special needs community here in Marion County and all around Marion County. And that includes the Special Olympics. That includes also a whole cadre of other things that we do. One of the things that I've been watching, we ever heard of a company, an outfit called the Toastmasters International? What an outfit.
Yeah.
They can take guys like me. When I came into the NFL, I couldn't talk in front of 10 people. Now I can blab in front of anybody. Nobody cares what I say, but I don't. if I had a bad personality, I'd be upset. That's why I try not to get paid too much. I don't go out that much. But my point is, we started a Toastmasters. The group here in Marion County came out, and we call it the Gavel Club. And we've got our special needs community kids that come in. When I call them kids, but some of them are nearly as old as I am. But they have been having. We're going to do it once a quarter, and since last September, we've been running Gavel Club meetings every single Wednesday night, and they've been jam packed. That means that each one of these kids. Now these are special needs kids have to get up and they have to follow they're given a topic, they have to come up with a speech, they have to stay in a time zone, they have to hit key points, have to do everything. And it has been phenomenal to watch the growth of some of these kids. A lot of them have personality issues. You know, they don't feel like they fit in. That used to be when I'd show up at all the different things, nobody would look me in the eye, or so a lot of them wouldn't look me in the eye. Now you get the shyest one there will come up and put his hand out or her hand out and say, "Mr. Nottingham, it's so nice to see you tonight." Just seeing that confidence and that growth that they've made by being able to, you know, to stand for themselves. And I think it's cool as heck. And that's only some of the things that we got a whole bunch of volunteers that make this stuff go crazy. And so my job is to just go out and try to make sure we got enough money that we can do that without putting more of a burden on the families of these people. So that's the whole idea. And we are now a 501c3 accredited tax deductible organization. So I can promise every small business guy or every person that I see in this county, just like when I go to Miami to work down there, the money we make there stays there. The money we make here stays here. In Orlando, Tampa, wherever we're working as a group with the NFL alumni, the money stays pretty much local. We are not a national organization when it comes to that. We're working where we live, basically. Tony, I'm sorry I went off the deep end on you, but that's I get kind of excited about this because it's neat doing good stuff. And it's from the first time that Johnny Unitas and Earl and Tom Maddie took me to the state games in Baltimore, Maryland, the state games for Special Olympics, and we spent 2 days putting medals and ribbons on these Olympians. And when you put a medal on one of these guys or girls, they light up like a Christmas tree, and they are so proud of themselves. And I'm telling you what, that feeling will never leave me, and I'm not going to ever stop doing it.
Wow, that's fantastic. Great stuff. Good for you, Don, and the rest of the guys doing that are part of the NFL alumni chapters that you're touching. That's fantastic stuff. And, you know, kudos to you guys for continuing to do that stuff.
So, yeah, Don, it's kind of neat. But you know, what's really a payoff for us is usually when we get done with an event, sometime right after it's over, we'll all be sitting around a big table and telling lies about how fast we were and how many moves we had. And that's, you know, that's our chance to have, to recreate our old locker rooms. And, you know, that means picking on each other and having a good time and building, keeping our camaraderie. I mean, that's pretty neat. It's a pretty small club that I'm fortunate enough that I get to be a member of. And, I mean, there's a lot of super high quality people that, I've got to know from my time in sports, and that goes back to my very first peewee coach, and right up to to my last coach is Don Shula, who was phenomenal. I mean, it's just unbelievable the caliber and the actual learning process that you can get put through just by being there and being willing to be open to it.
Well, Don, it has been an absolute pleasure for Bob and I to get to have you back here on the show with us tonight. We hope you'll continue to come back, share more of your stories, your insights, and update us on the great works that you guys are doing. Because it's always great having you.
Please come back.
Yeah, well, thank you. Have a good day.
All right, take care, Don. All the best to you and your family.
All right, thank you for having me on here. I appreciate it. All right, bye-bye. All right,
take care, Don. That is former Colts and Dolphins fullback Don Nottingham, and certainly one of our favorites. And you can understand why listening to Don share his stories and his insights. So that's all fantastic stuff. We look forward to catching up with Don again real soon. All right, when Bob and I come back on the other side of this station break, you'll hear from our friends at Kyven Foods at the Salt Creek Golf Retreat. And then on the other side of that, we'll give you our spotlight on the positive. We'll do that just here in a couple of minutes. So stick with us.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end, and I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consist of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's KYVAN82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
If you're looking for a great place for your annual golf outing, a weekend golf getaway, or just a round of golf with your buddies, then Salt Creek Golf Retreat is just what you're looking for. Centrally located in Nashville, Indiana, just south of Indianapolis and west of Cincinnati, this challenging but fair 18-hole golf course appeals to all skill levels, and its scenic views of rolling hills and tree-lined fairways are sure to make golfing memories for years to come. Owned and operated by former Purdue and New York Giants fullback Randy Manier, Salt Creek Golf Retreat offers stay-and-play packages that include golf and a fully furnished one- or two-bedroom condo. After your round, be sure to stop by the 19th hole sports bar and restaurant for great food, fun, and drinks. Randy and his staff will treat you like family. For more information, log on to saltcreekgolf.com. That's saltcreekgolf.com. Or give them a call at 812-558-5944. Salt Creek Golf Retreat. Start making your golfing memories today.
Thursday Night Tailgate, where the spotlight is always on the positive. Tune in Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time to hear your favorite NFL legends, players, and coaches sharing their stories. Now back to Chris and Bob.
I wouldn't joke about anything else that happened to you tonight.
And we're back here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Pardon me. And we're turning on our spotlight on the positive. Bob, who do you have for us this week?
I have a kind of a personal story here, and it really hits home. You know, I was about 2 weeks ago, Chris, I get an email from a girl I used to work with, and she says to me, I worked with her for years, and she moved up to Maine. And I get an email from her, Chris, and said her brother had passed away from cancer. And I said to myself right away, I said, wow, he was much younger than you. I'm saying to myself, this guy was about 40, 45 years old. Well, ends up he was 42 years old, Chris. And he had gone to the doctor on March 1st of this year, not feeling well. And they ultimately found out that the guy had some major colon cancer that had spread everywhere. And having known the guy, I didn't know him well, but knowing of him, Chris, I knew he was a big football fan. So I inquired to her a few days ago about him, and she directed me to a lot of things that the he was a huge Buffalo Bills fan, Chris, humongous fan. I mean, this guy, wherever he went, he wore a Bills hat and a Bills jersey. So what happened was, Chris, he was the type that says, oh, before I die, and he knew they only gave him 3 to 6 months to live, Chris, in March, he said, I want to walk on that field in Buffalo one more time. So the powers that be got him in touch with a organization called Treasured Time. It's kind of like the adult equivalent of the Make-A-Wish Foundation for adults or parents that are ill and terminally ill, Chris. And that was his wish, just to walk on the Buffalo field one more time, because he had been up there. He grew up in upstate New York. And again, I've never come across a bigger Bill fan. Maybe a guy like Angelo Kane can aspire to this. But again, so what helped, with the help of Treasured Time, he gets to go up to Buffalo, and it's just amazing what the team did for him. They will, and I welcome everyone out there, go to BuffaloBills.com and just look for this story about Jay O'Leary, where they actually got him there this spring and gave him everything, Chris. They did a little mock press conference. He did his own little mock press conference. He walked on the field. He had his kids up there. They gave him all kinds of souvenirs, et cetera. And it's just, it'll make you cry and laugh at the same time to see what happened. But and she had just texted me earlier today, and I said, anything else you want to add? He says they sent, when he had his funeral last week, Chris, the Buffalo Bills sent an incredible arrangement of flowers. They also had a signed team card by every person who was at the mini camps. They also gave him a helmet that was signed and actually ended up being buried with him. But it's an incredibly emotional ride, Chris. But what the Buffalo Bills did for that family and for my good friend Leanne, we'll never forget. And it's just, this all came to be, and I became aware of it within the last 48 hours. And it is an incredible story. Again, BuffaloBills.com. Read about the story about Jay O'Leary, now dead at the age of 42.
Wow. Yeah, what an incredibly sad story. But, you know, kudos to the Buffalo Bills for making, what time he had, something I'm sure that he treasured and was very near and dear to his heart and certainly to the heart of the family. So kudos to the Bills for doing what they did, but an incredibly sad story for a football fan, a Bills fan, and a person that we lost way, way too early. Bob, this week I want to put the spotlight on our good friend Nick Lowry and the work that he and other NFL legends are doing to help homeless folks in the Phoenix area. One of the programs, Bob, under Nick Lowry's Youth Foundation is called Champions for the Homeless. And earlier this month, they put on their second annual Christmas and Summer dinner, where they fed over 1,400 homeless people in and around the Phoenix area. Those who came were also given gift cards, socks, underwear, and water bottles to take back with them. And Nick's foundation is, particularly focused on aiding homeless military veterans in that area as well. And Bob, his foundation has a number of other programs under its umbrella, like Stronger, Safer Sports, where they try to help reduce concussions in sports. All Pros Against Bullying, which Nick, has talked with us, Bob, many times here on the show. And a third program is called Nations Building for Native Youth, a program to help Native Americans and the Native American community. So for his work, Nick is he won the 2017 Scottsdale Rotary Club Service Above Self Award and the Linking Sports Lifetime Award. So kudos go out this week to Nick Lowry and the impact that he is having, making not only you know, folks in the, you know, Phoenix community's lives better, but he's also touching lives in Kansas City and in New York where he played during his career. So more great stuff, Bob, you know, from Nick Lowry and the great stuff that his foundation is doing.
You and I have talked in the past of he's probably the smartest guy we'll ever speak with. And it's incredible that he could also use that scholastic background and his incredible smarts, Chris, to put it toward great use. Some people can't combine the two, but he does it like few other can. And we always love speaking with him, and we're just marveled at his intelligence when it comes to football and on and off the field. So it doesn't surprise me what he does, Chris, but kudos to Nick. He's one of our good friends.
All right, Bob, it is time for us to put a bow on this episode of Thursday Night Tailgate. We want to send out our thanks again to Michael Jackson, Tony Collins, Brian Weber, Andy Russell, and Don Nottingham for joining us. And, Bob, as always, it's a privilege for me to spend my Thursday nights with you, my friend.
Well, that time flew by tonight, Chris, and that's usually the sign of tremendous guests. And, again, thank you for putting it together. That was a blast.
Yes, it was. All right, like I mentioned earlier, next week we're going to be out on vacation, but when we come back celebrating our 300th episode of Thursday Night Tailgate on Thursday, August the 10th, we're going to have some great friends celebrating with us. Former Rams and Chiefs wide receiver and TNT Hall of Famer Eddie Kennison will be here. Our partners, over on the No Huddle Show over on TuneIn.com, former Bears Pro Bowl defensive back Mark Carrier will join us, and Mark was outstanding the last time he was on the show. Former Vikings wide receiver Matthew Hatchett will be making a long overdue return here to Thursday Night Tailgate. Plus, we'll catch up with former Vikings and Chargers Pro Bowl guard and another TNT Hall of Famer, Ed White, will be back on the show. Plus, of course, Tony Collins will be here with us in his regular time slot. So we're going to have a lot of fun, a lot in store for you, when you come back a couple weeks from now. I want to remind you about following us on social media. First, please go on Facebook. We have a page for the show, Thursday Night Tailgate. Give us a like. That's important to us. Plus, both Bob and I have our own pages on Facebook as well. Please also check out our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. On there, you can see some of our future guests are going to be. Plus, you can stream or download any of our archive episodes for free from our site. On Twitter, you can find me at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzeri, and the show is at TNT Podcast. Plus, you can stream us on, for free on sites like TuneIn.com, our great friends and partners over there, plus on Podbean. And we really appreciate all the support the folks on Podbean have given to us. We're a featured and recommended show there in their sports and recreation section, both online and on their mobile app as well. So you can take us with you anywhere you go and listen to our conversations and the great folks that we are privileged to have on the show right there on your smartphone via the TuneIn or the Podbean app. Bob, take us home, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. I look forward to that great lineup in 2 weeks. I can't wait. So you be well until then. And thanks again to our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads, and to James Brocato and all the guys from Painted Faces for the upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, thanks to everyone tonight for listening. We appreciate you all the most. Until next week or 2 weeks from now, good night, Kevin. We miss you.